Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to handle radio silence when you're in post-interview follow-up mode. Here we go. Okay, Wendy, we get this question a lot. What do I do? I've interviewed. I'm waiting. You know, I don't know what to do. I don't want to talk to them too much. I left them one voicemail. I'm afraid if I leave them two, I'll be annoying. I'll get in trouble or something. I'm like, ugh. Yeah, they told me they'd definitely be back to me in a week, and it's been three. What do we do? So what should we tell them? What should they do?
First thing is continue to follow up. And the second is don't panic. This is not abnormal. Never put all your faith in one role, which I call the first love rule, and expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I would also say, I'm sure it's going to come up over and over again. Not only is it not abnormal, and when you continue to follow up, part of that is tone of voice. You know, people are surprised when we recommend giving people feedback as managers, and we recommend, you know, not an escalation. But I think people mistakenly think after three times they're following up with things like, you've told me you're going to call me, now why haven't you? And that's not follow up, that's judgment, guys. So let's start with continuing to follow up.
Yeah. So just as a reminder, in the follow-up cast,
In the interviewing series. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a public cast that extends the interviewing series, but the follow-up cast, not everybody has, right?
Okay. Yeah. So basically, we tell you to follow up by email and phone once a week for 10 weeks after your interview.
Yeah. And guys, just so you know, you're welcome to send us mails. We are now on the record as telling you that when you send a note and you say to us, I completely disagree with you, 10 weeks is too long, we're not going to answer. Okay? We're not. Wendy and I have tens of thousands of interviews, hundreds, maybe thousands of offers under our belts between both of us. You have no perspective compared to us. And so the fact that you feel uncomfortable with doing it for 10 weeks doesn't mean we're going to change our guidance. It's 10 weeks. Okay? So don't write us.
Just think about it. It's 2.5 months. How many things have you got on your desk that you've been meaning
been sitting there for
2.5 months or more? And how many of those things are really important to you? You've just not got to them. That's how it happens for recruiters and hiring managers too. You just like, there's a million things going on and getting back to you just keeps falling to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, and it's a combination of things. Folks say, well, time can't be a good thing. And so the candidate begins to feel desperate, begins to feel frustrated. But you're assuming that the hiring manager puts as much energy thinking about their relationship with you as you put into thinking about your relationship with them. And that's just false, because interviewing is completely lopsided when it comes to power and structure and so on. The interviewer has all the power and the interviewee has none unless they get an offer. So what happens is you believe that the time means something, but your measurement of time is how many times you've thought of this open situation in your life where it is not resolved, whereas the hiring manager probably forgot about you within 5 minutes after you left. Mm-hmm. And that may irritate you, but that's no reason to suggest that your perspective is an accurate one. It's just yours.
Yeah. He's trying to run a team with one down. That's the minimal amount of stress he's got around this.
Right.
Then there's approvals and there's, you know, he's got to talk to HR about salary and he's got to consider this and that and the other. And there's 1,000 things that can be going on around recruitment. And then he's got to run his team with one down as well. So it's not unusual.
Yeah.
It's really easy, and we get this on emails a lot. They say we get lots of negative thoughts. It's easy to fill that space when you don't know what's happening with negative thoughts.
Sure.
So they say, I think they must have ruled me out, and they don't want to tell me.
Which happens a lot, but just because you're thinking it doesn't mean it's true in your case.
Nope. I must have screwed up really badly. I don't remember doing it, but I must have done.
Which, again, happens a lot, but is not helpful. And may not be accurate in your case.
Yeah. I asked for too much money.
Again, happens a lot, but may not have happened in your case.
Exactly. And they offered another candidate and they're waiting for their response.
Yeah.
Which is probably the most likely of there being a reason. The biggest reason is there's stuff going on and we're trying to pull everything together in order to make you the offer or to make someone the offer.
I actually think it's different than that. I think somebody did well, but the hiring manager decided he didn't decide to hire. He said, no, this person was very good, but I really wanted Superman and Superman's not out there right now, or maybe I'll continue, or maybe I got busy. There are 1,000 possible things, I think. I think just generally not closing the loop, not making a decision is the biggest one. And again, it's because they're doing so many other things. And the only question is, if you're still interested in the position, guys, the only question you ought to be asking yourself is, if I'm still interested, what state of mind or what actions will best help me achieve this position? Trying to guess at what's happening is not going to help you, particularly if all of them are generally negative. So that's why we say your job during this time is to remain positive and professional, because those two things are the most likely things that will cause you, if in fact your attitude and behavior in the intervening weeks will make a difference. And the assumption, of course, is that every time you take an action, in some way you'll make a difference, unless you're in a kabuki play. And so the question is, what do you do? And so that means continuing to follow up, right?
Yeah. So you want to leave positive, cheerful messages, send positive, cheerful emails to the hiring manager or whoever your contact is with a no pressure message. So you don't send one that says, when are you going to decide? You say, I'm still really interested and please let me know if there's anything else I can tell you that will help you make a decision.
Yeah, my search continues to progress, but I still have great interest in your opportunity. Would love to talk to you about it. Let me know when you can talk. Yeah. Or I'm just following up. I know it's been a while and I also know how things are at work. I'm excited about the opportunity. I wish you well in filling it. And I certainly hope it's me. Happy to talk at your convenience. Here's my cell. I mean, guys, that's what it's like every week. And by the way, if you start getting negative, it doesn't come across that you're frustrated because you have other offers. It comes across that you have nothing else and you put all your eggs in this basket. Rather than if you say, hey, my search is continuing, they're going to assume that other opportunities might be yours. Now, don't make anything up in order to impress them with your search that doesn't exist, but stay positive. It is the most likely way that if any of your behaviors will make a difference, positive professional ones are the ones that are most likely to make a difference.
That's right. Until you're told no, you're still in with a chance.
Yes.
And the moment you throw your toys out of the pram or just even have a hint of negativity in your voice, you may have moved a maybe or a yes to a no for no reason apart from your own frustration with the timing or the negative messages you put in your own head.
For our American friends, a pram is short for a perambulator, which is to say a stroller, meaning you're a baby and you're throwing your toys out in a fit of pique because you're pouting, which is never good. And again, folks, I know you're entitled to feel what you feel, and I'm not saying I haven't felt it, that you didn't get an offer when you wanted to, but by that token, by saying, well, I'm feeling this, and so therefore I want to be authentic and I want them to know I'm frustrated, that's a bit like saying to your boss before you start a presentation to somebody senior, I'm really nervous right now. You don't do that. First of all, because you generally don't share your emotions at work unless they're positive. You certainly don't share them in a public vein or to someone who has authority over you as a hiring manager would. Okay. You also said don't panic.
Yeah. So this kind of continues what we've been saying. This is not abnormal. In fact, I would probably go as far as to say this is completely normal.
Yeah, it is.
You need to have to wait with no information. If you read blogs and things written by recruiters who work with hiring managers, number one complaint is hiring managers going silent on them and telling them, oh my gosh, this is so urgent. I have to have someone right now. Send me CVs right now. And then disappearing before you interview, or interviewing and then disappearing and not returning your calls. You can tell how frustrated, because I've been through that 1,000 times. So it's not abnormal. Like we said, hiring managers have 1,000 things to do, and often hiring or talking to their recruiter is way down on the list.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether it's a big company or a small one.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of reasons why hiring managers disappear. They go on vacation, they get sick, they get involved in projects or product launches, they have other staffing problems, they have personal problems, they have all sorts of things which will cause hiring to slip down their priority list. And we'll probably say that that's a bad thing, but this is for individuals going through interviews and not for managers. We'll tell them off on manager tools.
Yeah, exactly. We'll tell them off on manager tools. Say, don't let your hiring take too long, even though the really, really great companies do take a long time.
Yeah, but they stay in contact at the same time.
Yes, absolutely.
In small companies, there's usually a small number of people, and that causes people delays to be amplified. So if there's only one person in HR and they have to vet all of the contracts or vet all of the salaries, and they're also dealing with payroll and pensions and people problems and all sorts of other things, then your offer can be delayed just because there's one person. If there's one person out of a five-person company, that's 20% of the work not being done. And, you know, hiring is probably one of those things that's not being done because it's not customer-facing, which is the thing you keep going with. In large companies, it's the process delay. So the larger the company, the longer the process, usually. And you have hires being approved by multiple people, and those people may go on vacation in sequence. They seem to do that on purpose, in my experience. Just when they're due to sign off a bunch of hires. Like, where did you go? I went on vacation. and then there's references and other checking that tends to be more comprehensive in larger companies, so that can take a longer time.
Yeah, okay. And even if those things, I mean, those are good explanations, and you could be the number one person, and all this stuff is happening. And what happens? Because you don't get what you want, you start going, what's taking so long? And I'm getting frustrated. And yes, it would be better if the hiring manager kept in touch with you and said, listen, I apologize for this. But maybe they interviewed 20 people. Maybe they just have a lot to do. When the roles are reversed, you're going to want some grace from the candidate whom you're going to hire. Frankly, you're going to want grace from the people that you turn down as well. But a lack of information, a radio silence, is not necessarily bad. And even if you could find out that it is bad news, any negative or less than professional communication or thought processes that could lead to communication are not helpful to your situation. Unless helpfulness to you means accelerating a decision with the chance the decision will be no, because you irritate a recruiter if they're involved, or a hiring company. If you would like to accelerate a decision, behave like a child. You'll get a decision. And you mentioned about another candidate holding up the situation. And, you know, guys, that does happen. And there are plenty of situations where companies who are smart know, I'm going to make an offer fairly quickly, but I want the guy that I want to give him 2 full weeks. And then, unfortunately, he has some business travel, so he asked for 3 more days. Suddenly, it's close to 3 weeks. And then he turns them down for all kinds of reasons. Now, suddenly, you're the number two. Yes, it would have been better if you were definitely out of the running for them to tell you no in advance. That's not always the way companies do things. We just did a Manager Tools podcast. Part of the reason we're doing this one now is because there's a Manager Tools podcast. I think that's in first or second parts right now. We're recording this in November of 2014 about how to decline a candidate. And it happens that some candidates meet the criteria but are not the number one person. Now, we're not saying every company does it this way, but the right way to hire is to set a standard. And you only look at who's best once you've determined who's over the standard. What many companies do is they look at 8 candidates and they say, let's hire the best one. And they never ask themselves, is the best one good enough for the job? And so it could very well be that the reason why it's delayed 3 weeks is because everybody else has been told no. In fact, I had a candidate once say to me, I'm pretty sure everybody else has been told no. I talked to a couple of the guys, they're friends of mine. They've been told no. I haven't told anything. I'm really getting kind of ticked off. Really? Well, yeah, they're not communicating with me. Maybe it's because you're not ruled out. Well, yeah, that's true, but they should be telling me. And then I say to him, really? I actually said to this one kid, beggars can't be choosers. You've never been a hiring manager before, and you're going to judge them, and you're going to tell them how they should do it? I got to tell you something. You're talking about a process that's generally broken in most organizations. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons Manager Tools, in nearly 10 years of recording, hasn't come out with all the stuff we want to share about how to hire well is because we have 100 casts on it. 100. And we're never going to get through all of them, I think, in my lifetime. So don't panic. Yes, there's a possibility there's a delay because some other candidate is being offered. And if they take the offer, you won't be offered. And that delays the process. As Wendy said, we assume you're smart enough to know that you continue your other opportunities. And if for some reason you're in the middle of interviewing, when you get an offer from your favorite company, you can bow out of those interviews at somebody else. You can do that. But let's not get too wrapped around the axle that a company thinks somebody else is slightly better than you and that you get your nose bent out of shape because you're the number two. Because the company's not telling you that. And if you're good enough, if you found out later you were the number two, just prove to them you're wrong after the fact. But don't pout about it before the fact. That only increases the chances you won't get the offer.
Anytime you're thinking the company should be doing something,
yes.
You're judging.
You're judging. Yeah. Don't panic. Remain positive. Remain professional. Do the right things that will keep you in the running or not, or will not kick you out of the running. Okay. And you said your first love rule is never put all your faith in one role.
Yeah. So when I was a teenager and I worked every summer, and I would go for an interview for a job somewhere, and I would instantly spend all my time then thinking, that would be a great job. It's right by my house. It's good money. It's this. I could do this at lunchtime. And so I really want to do this. And I would have my entire focus on this one job that somebody had done a really good job of selling to me. And I wouldn't do anything else. And then I wouldn't get that job. And then it would be a week into the summer or 2 weeks into the summer and I didn't have a job. And because I didn't have a job, I didn't have any money. And at some stage, I realized that it was like first love. You know, I was absolutely intense on one thing.
Right.
And then when it wasn't there, I was heartbroken. And it wasn't helping me. So that's why I call this the first love rule.
It would be galactically stupid.
Yeah, to think that you're going to get every role, right?
Yeah. Whenever you're interviewing, You know this, we've already alluded to it 50 times. Companies are interviewing multiple people. They expect you to be interviewing at multiple companies.
And you are at the mercy of the company to a certain extent and their timing, but only for this opportunity. So if you have control of your job search and you have multiple opportunities that you're working on, then you stop being at the mercy of one person or one company, and you start to be in control and you start to control the timing of what's going on. If you apply for a bunch of roles and you interview for a bunch of things, you have much more control about what's going on than if you just, there's a relationship between just you and one company.
I really am surprised by people who serially apply. And I think it's a bad sign. I think it is a sign of a really poor approach to hiring. I think it suggests that they don't feel like they're making a decision. They're not trying to get what they want, that they're just trying to avoid the pain of the process. I respect that you probably think there's pain, but the idea of interviewing serially and then the serialization of it creates a greater timeline before you get a yes. It is a bad indicator about your thought processes.
Yeah. And if you start your job search and you find something that's perfect, and then you go through an 8-week process with them, which is pretty short, and then you're not the successful candidate, you just lost. Because if you only reapply for one role every 8 weeks, that's only 6 in the whole year. And if you've only applied for 6 jobs in a year, the likelihood of you getting one of those is marginally zero. If the reason you're moving is because you sense layoffs or you sense a change in the business, then potentially you're making a forced move rather than an unforced one, and you're going to have to choose something you don't want.
Right.
If you're unemployed or in danger of being laid off or at a stage where you're really ready to make a move, then 6 in a year should be 6 in a week or 6 in a day.
And a serial process, it means You've lost the roles that would have been available that had you seen them when you started. You haven't built any momentum with your network. You haven't built any momentum with your interviewing practice. If you do it serially over time, it's 3 to 4 to 5 weeks between interviews. Oh, geez, that's not good. You haven't had a ton of feedback on your resume or interview style. You probably know very little about the job market in your area because you're learning about it serially. Looking for a job is a job. There are huge benefits simply to a really intense search.
That point you said about not building any momentum with your network is interesting. If you were only applying for a job every 8 weeks and you contacted your network every 8 weeks and said, hey, I'm looking for a job, after like 3 months, they're going to 3-4 months, they're being like, hey, it would be 5-6 months before they notice they had 3 emails from you and it's been 6 months. They're going to start to be thinking, hey, this is taking a really long time. And what does that say about you?
Yeah. And last, we have expect the unexpected. You never know.
Yeah. Companies do really odd things, or at least things that seem odd to you from the outside. They'll call you 6 months after an interview and make you an offer when you've moved on. Or when they interviewed you, they hired someone then, and now they've got another vacancy. And rather than going through the whole hiring process again, they go back to the people they saw 6 months ago and go, hey, do you want a job? And you think, but I interviewed there 6 months ago. Why would you call me now? But to them, it makes perfect sense. Or you've applied for a role that's apparently available. It's listed on their website, for example. And they'll say, no, we don't have that one anymore. But do you want this one in a different division that's similar? Or this one in Oklahoma, and you're in like Detroit. Or that hiring manager left and he took your resume with him. And so suddenly you get a call from a completely different company saying, hey, do you want to come interview here?
Exactly.
And you're just thinking, what? But it all makes sense behind the scenes. Or they get halfway through a process and then have a hiring freeze and drop it. Or they'll be interviewing while they're laying people off while they're interviewing, and you're seeing it in the newspaper, this company laid off 20,000 people and you're still in the interview process, which is usually because the 20,000 people are doing something that's not core to the business or that they've decided not to do. You would be doing something that is core to the business or is essential for them to carry on with.
Yep.
And there's a couple of reasons why all of this strangeness happens. It's partly because organizations are made up of people and people do odd things.
Yeah, they
in
do.
In order to optimize their own interests.
Yeah, and I think that's important. They optimize their own interests, and that may be in conflict with yours. And the fact that you want your own interests optimized doesn't change that their interests are different than yours. Simple.
And organizations, once you get past, you know, a handful of people, are complicated. They're complex. They, you know, might have multiple divisions, one of which is doing well and one of which isn't. And so one's hiring and one's laying people off.
Yep.
All sorts of things go on in big organizations that make sense from the entirety that don't make sense from the one perspective that you have. And you only have your one outside perspective.
Fortune favors the prepared, guys. If you are prepared and somebody says, hey, are you interested in this? I mean, look, if the guy offers you an opportunity to come interview in Oklahoma and you're not ready to move to Oklahoma, it's okay. Say, it's really kind of you to offer. Right now, I'm focusing my search just on Chicago. That said, for the right opportunity, I mean, I'm open to considering opportunities. And if he says, you know, look, I'd love to talk about it. I'll admit to you, my preference is to stay in Chicago. And the guy says, well, we're actually going to promote you. We're going to give you a big raise. And you've been wanting to be a regional manager. And we have a regional manager position open up. And look, there's nothing wrong with saying no to that, okay? But these are the kind of things that happen if you keep from shooting yourself in the foot. These are the kinds of things that happen when you keep things going on. And I got to tell you, somebody who stayed in touch with me for 10, 15, 20 weeks, always pleasant, I would start giving them major props. Also, I would know that if I didn't talk to anybody for 10 weeks and I called them and said, hey, listen, I want to follow up on the interview, and the guy said, well, look, I haven't heard from you, so I kind of moved on. Now, if he was still interested, but he was basically sending me a message, I'd say, well, okay, I understand that completely. And I'd hang up. I'd say, I wish you well, and I'd hang up. And he didn't even realize that there was a possibility I would have talked to him, right? But guys, it doesn't do you any good. You have no power the best way to expect the unexpected is to put yourself in a position where other opportunities will be made to you. And courage is not the absence of fear. It is acting in spite of your fear. So have some courage about how it's going to turn out. Okay, Wendy, wrap us up.
Okay, so continue to follow up. Don't panic. This is not abnormal. Never put all your faith in one role and expect the unexpected. Just remain professional, because that and following up positively can't hurt you, whereas being negative can definitely hurt you.
Yeah. And as one of Horsman's laws says, until you got something, you got nothing. So don't stop until you have something. All right. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Hope you understand. It's going to take a while, and you just keep trying. See you next week.